Cage.
Story City and Ames.
Welcome to Local Talk, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events of our Central Iowa community. Thank you for tuning in. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour, along with good neighbor Pat Schlerbaum and engineer and station manager Mike Murphy.
Our day starts out with sunny skies and with a high around 85. Winds will be from the northwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Then this evening we will have clear skies with a low of 62 degrees and west-northwest winds at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Currently it is 61 degrees. Remember that if you have to be outside, take frequent breaks, find a cool place, stay hydrated, and if you have critters outside, make sure they have some shade, moving air, and plenty of water.
Well, we're going to have a family fun hour set of programs at the North Grand Mall. It's a series that's coming up here in the near future. And to visit with us about that is local artist Tim Reed. Good morning, Tim.
Morning.
Tim, tell us a little bit about what's your background as far as local artists.
Well, I'm a children's illustrator and graphic designer. I have a company called Five Fingers Creative, and I work here in town. I have a studio here in town. I have a line of kids' books called My Very Silly Monster. You may have seen some of my work around town. Back in 2016, I did a mural for the Ames Public Library. I've done some other work around town. Most recently, I had the opportunity to work on one of the Transformer boxes. And so, yeah, that's pretty much what I've done around the community. And then I work with international or national independent authors to help them illustrate their books and get their books out.
Now, when you say Transformer boxes, and now I recall seeing that one, you're not talking about those toys that change into different shapes. You're talking about a power transformer, right?
That's right. Although the toy would have been very cool, but no,
Yeah. Okay, so tell us a little bit about what this Family Fun Hour program is all about. How are you involved?
Well, early spring, I was walking through the mall, and I was installing a banner for my children's school, St. Cecilia's School. Mm-hmm. I was walking through the mall, and I was looking at the space, and at the time, the hour I was there, there weren't a lot of people there. And I thought, this would be a great opportunity to do some fun stuff in the mall. And I was thinking just for myself. I thought, I want to do some, you know, my library presentations. I travel to schools and libraries, and I present to kids. And I talked about the power of creativity and literacy and those type of things. And I thought it'd be kind of fun to come in here and do this program at the mall and offer an opportunity for kids to come in and, you know, on a summer day to come in and watch a program occasionally. Then I thought about my kids' school, and I thought, well, maybe I can get them to sponsor this program. And so I was able to get St. Cecilia's School to sponsor it. And so I approached the mall, and they had a really great idea. And I said, well, if you're going to be doing this, why don't you team up with Raising Readers in Story County? So I happened to know Jerry Hyde and Lynn Carey from my work at the library. So I called them, and it was just, you know, marriage made in heaven. We came up with this really neat idea about called Family Fun Time, where we would do four consecutive Fridays. Mm-hmm. And each Friday would be either a performance or a story time. It'd be a free opportunity for kids and families in the community to come out to the mall and sit and enjoy anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour of a program for, you know, kids of all ages to enjoy.
And you mentioned kids of all ages, and I can't help but think that parents or just folks that maybe see what's going on, sit down and get into the moment and must have some enjoyment, because I think we all at heart kind of like to have stories told to us in one form or another. Yeah. This sounds like a great opportunity. Can you describe a little bit about what type of activities are involved?
Yeah, Family Fun Time, basically, I'm going to be kicking off the program this coming Friday on July 15th at 11 a.m. at the mall. And like I said, I'll be doing my program that I normally do for schools and libraries, and I'll be doing some live action drawing and some audience participation, telling a few stories along the way, doing some fun improvisational illustration, and kids really get a kick out of it. And then we're going to have some story times by Raising Readers, Story County. And then we've teamed up also, and this is really, really great. Miss Wendy at Tuneful Journey at the mall for a musical story time, and that's going to be a lot of fun too. Because besides stories, who loves anything but music? And so they were gracious enough to come join us as well, and they're going to be on July 29th. So every other week there'll be a story time or a performance.
And this is for the next four Fridays. Is that how we're
next four? Yep, yep.
Okay, and it's at the same time, 11 a.m. Well, okay.
Right. And if it goes well, we may continue into the fall. So okay. We'll see how it goes. We really wanted to offer an opportunity because it's, going to be back to school soon, as sad as that may be, back to school soon. And people are going to be out and about. And I thought this would be a good opportunity to really give the little ones a chance to see something. And this is, although it may be geared toward the younger kids, all kids will be able to enjoy this. So now, it's going to be the center court at the mall.
Okay. Now, is there... So it's the center court. Is there an opportunity for any hands-on for the youngsters, or are you presenting ideas afterwards that they can maybe take home and do on their own?
Well, for my program, I'm going to be doing all kinds of fun drawing. I'll be doing some fun draw. No, there won't be a draw along program. They can go home and take their ideas. And most of the time, my programs, kids will go home and draw all afternoon because they get so inspired by the fun things that we were able to do at the program itself. I'll have a coloring page that they can take home with them. Okay. And then while I haven't seen Miss Wendy's program for Tuneful Journey, I'm pretty sure it's going to be a really interactive, fun musical event. And of course, Raisin Readers, they have great readers, Jerry Hyde, and the story time is going to be so much fun and engaging time for the kids as well.
So do you, during that story time, do you get any kind of ideas from that, maybe incorporate that into your drawing portion of the program?
Well, for my program, which is separate from the Raisin Readers program,
okay.
We do a improvisational story where I will ask the audience some ideas about things, and they give me some ideas, and I draw a story versus tell a story. And so you never know where the story is going to go. And so it's kind of be, it can be kind of a nice surprise, and the kids really get a kick out of ideas, almost trying to stump the artist, if you will. And it can go some pretty crazy places sometimes.
Yeah, I can understand, because I know as in some of the summer camps and scout camps I was involved in, that was one thing we would do around the fire at night. Somebody would start a story, and then the person sitting next to him had to add to it. Your mind was the illustration board as to where it would take it. So this sounds like a great opportunity to break out some of those creative aspects of the youngsters or those that are involved in your program. Tim, do you ever have maybe somebody from the audience come up and help you illustrate, or is it strictly back and forth?
No, I do. There's a portion of the program where, I don't want to give too much away.
Sure.
But there's a couple of portions of the program where kids are able to come up and join me, and we do some fun things together as well. These are some of the things that I have a great opportunity, like when I substitute at St. Cecilia's School here in town, one of the sponsors, I'm able to come into the classrooms, and it gives the kids, they always look forward to that because we get to do this program in the actual classrooms. And then we have an after-school art program there too, where we get to do some fun stuff like this. So yeah, I call the kids up. Usually the kids that come up get to take home the drawing with them. Mm-hmm. So it's because it's a collaboration of ideas and creativity. So yeah, like I said, I don't want to give too much away.
Sure.
You really have to come and see it to really see how creative these kids can be. Sometimes I think we underestimate the creativity of kids and the ideas, or we become immune to it. And it's really fun to see some of these things come out of there. It's really neat.
I just want you to whet everybody's curiosity and appetite. So I don't think we've given too much away yet here.
Nope.
Yeah. So is this something similar then? You mentioned that you take this to school, so I assume it's similar in that regard. And I didn't catch, do you do this at the public library then as well? Do you offer this?
Right, I do. I when I first started My Very Silly Monster books back in 2012, I started to travel to schools and libraries. And with this improvisational, I call it improvisational storytelling through illustration, because I will, like I said, I ask the audience for ideas, just like improv comedy, and the audience throws out ideas and I work it into the illustration. And I've started to do that at libraries around the Midwest. Mm-hmm. Well, and then that just spread out. And then locally, I've done it at a couple of the Ames Community Schools, as well as St. Cecilia School. And it's been a real hit.
So how did you get involved in art? What prompted you to become interested in art and then to share your love for art?
Well, I have to credit my love for art to boredom. When I grew up on a farm, it was just me and my sisters were always off doing something else. But in my downtime, you know, being 30 minutes out of town, you know, if I wasn't doing something, you know, out hanging out with my dog and on the farm, I was always drawing. I don't remember a time when I wasn't wanting to do something creative. And so, you know, my mother was very, very good about making sure that I had all the supplies and the things I needed to do those type of things. Mm-hmm. So I don't remember a time when I didn't want to do art. I went to school at in the Quad Cities and really kind of honed my skills into creative digital design and illustration. And then I've always been working as an illustrator. So it's been a, you know, very good part of my soul, so I really appreciate it.
Boy, that sounds great. I know that you know, there's a lot of doodlers and drawers out there that don't have that opportunity, and it sounds like you took what you were doing that one step farther and made it part of your almost your life.
Yeah, it's when it stops becoming what you do and what you are, that's a big important part. I can speak for a lot of artists out there who will tell you that when you do, you know, something in the creative field for a living, you really have to love it. It really drives who you are. I'm blessed to have my wife, who, you know, Barb, who is just a really big supporter of all the things I do, as well as my kids. And so it's nice to have that support from my family. Mm-hmm. And the community as well, to have these opportunities in Ames.
So with your family, are they somewhat of artists too, or what is their interest in this? Do you have a lot of little monster drawings hanging around the house, or what?
We did when they were younger.
Yeah.
You know, my kids range from 11 to 18. And so now they are all very creative. My wife is extremely creative. And so we have a really, really great opportunity at our home. We have a specific room in our home just for music. All of our kids play music instruments. They're either drawing, painting, or doing something creative throughout the day, and it's a nice environment. It really is.
Oh, that's great. It sounds like a place that you go to for inspiration. That little room, whether it's the room or whether it's just taking time and creating with your mind and your getting through the tools of your trade. Tim, tell us once again what the event is and where it's going to be.
The awesome North Grand Mall is presenting Family Fun Time, and it's on Fridays at 11 a.m. in the Center Court, starting July 15th, July 22nd, August 5th, and well, back to July 29th as well. It's every Friday, starting this Friday, next four Fridays, and it's a free event. Mm-hmm. There's no cost to it. Nothing's going to be sold, and so you can come in, just kind of hang out and watch the programming. Bring your kids, or just bring your, there'll be a few chairs out there as well. And like I said, it's right in the Center Court. And the folks at the mall have been super great to let us do this. And we look forward to meeting all the, you know, folks from the community come on out and see this.
Okay, Tim Reed, local artist. Thank you very much for joining us. And be sure to get down to the North Grand Mall for the Family Fun Hour. And the first one is 11 a.m. on July 15th.
Thank you so much.
This Thursday, the 14th of July, learn about the water of Ada Hayden Lake, its origin, the source of the water, and relationship to our water supply here in Ames. Bill Simskin, who is the ISU Hydrogeology Professor Emeritus, will explain these topics, so you meet at the Calhoun Park parking lot at southeast side of the lake at 7 p.m. And they'll take a little walk down the along the lakefront there and talk about the water. And this is a great opportunity for you to quiz that local water expert. For details, you can go to Friends of Ada Hayden Heritage Park. If you're just tuning in, it's about 16 minutes after the hour. I'm Mike Metz, along with Pat Schillerbaum and engineer Mike Murphy. And now joining us is Story County Conservation's Outreach Communications Coordinator. Well, we're having a little bit of, Pat.
Technical difficulty.
Yeah, so Casey's not able to join in for some reason here. But I know that what we're going to be talking about here is a little bit of update on what's going on with Story County Conservation. Mm-hmm. I know that on her list, she was going to give us an update on Hickory Grove Park, the lake. It's in full swing right now, and the water level is up. They've been waiting for the last couple of years for rains to fill it because it's filled with runoff, so it's up and full and ready to go.
It's been under renovation. They went in and made a lot of good fish habitat, did some, I think, some dredge work opening back up. It did a lot of siltation in Iowa Lakes, so they addressed that, and we've had enough rains now that it's...
And I think they, I know they, Casey has joined us, but I know they made the island, they made it into a peninsula so folks could get out, do a little additional fishing. Yeah. Casey, let's try you again. How are you?
Good. Good morning.
Good morning. We, Pat and I, were just visiting briefly about the Hickory Grove Park Lake and some of the activities. We didn't talk about the Colo Parade and those activities out there, but could you, do you have a little information on that? That happened just this past weekend?
That was. So the Colo Days, we hosted one of the days at Hickory Grove Park on Saturday. And there's a lot of activities, and people can explore the park, and it was a great success. A lot of people had fun. So we love to partner with the local communities to get people out on our and enjoy our parks.
Yeah, I heard that there was quite a number of folks there. I know that last season, I believe the first one to rededicate the park, and they also held one of those events out there, but I was told one of the big draws was the slide, the water slide that was set up. Do you know anything about that?
I don't. So that was all put together by the city of Colo, and we just hosted, but that does sound like it would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about what's coming up, Story County Conservation, as far as activities for the upcoming month.
As we know, Hickory Grove Park is open. We also had some very exciting things happening at our other parks. If anyone likes to go swimming at West Peterson Park Beach, that went under a great update. We put in a new concrete path that leads down to the beach, and we also installed a two-tiered beach system. So that was closed for about 2 weeks, but now that is officially reopen, and it makes it easier and more accessible for the community to enjoy.
I know I was able to get over there and take a look, and just pass word to the staff that they did a tremendous job. It for those beachgoers, it's got to be a great thing. It's still a great place to go and check out the birds and nature activities going on. But for those folks who like to swim, that's the place to go.
It is, yes. It's a very nice beach, and I encourage everyone to check out the new update.
Now, I was just going to add, I think there was some refurbishment on the original portion of Dakin's Lake. Can you tell us about that? It would be the east side. Do you have information?
Yeah, that's my second update for
okay.
the park.
Go for it.
So, yes, Dakin's Lake is one of our parks with campgrounds. The other park is Hickory Grove Park. In East Dakin's, we like to kind of call that used to be kind of primitive, smaller sites, had electrical, but it wasn't the best. So we actually gave that a nice new refresh. We created larger L-shaped spots to accommodate more modern campers. We upped the electrical voltage and also increased water resources. So now campsites can share water with those between the 8 campsites that we redid. And now we have 2 permanent tent campsites there as well. So if anyone's interested in checking out East Dakins, all sites are now reservable on mycountyparks.com.
Okay. And I assume, is there a park attendant up at Dakins Lake?
We do have a campground host who can help you with any questions. They're located at the main campground by where we have a full hookups and over there. And we also have park rangers on duty that drive around and help with any questions as well.
Okay, and I know you've got one down at Hickory Park, the lake there at the campground site. So really handy if you've got questions or you're new to the area. I know there's a lot of folks that seem to habituate that area from weekend to weekend, but there's always new individuals coming in and taking advantage of what we offer here. What about, are there any summer camps or day camps still going, or are we in the part of the season where those are winding down?
We are in full swing of our summer camps still.
Okay.
They are all full. They have been very popular, but that doesn't mean you should give up hope. We do take wait list people on the camps, and you just never know when another student or child can't come in that week for camp, and you might just get a call to fill that spot. So if something interests you, I would highly encourage everyone to check out the wait list for those camps.
Okay. And this sounds to me like either you've got to perhaps increase some opportunities or make sure folks sign up early for the next round, huh?
Yeah. Yep. Always highly encourage to sign up early. We did have a few openings earlier this summer, so the numbers have definitely trickled in over the last month or so.
Okay. What are there any events for, I'm thinking owls, for example, the older, wiser, livelier souls. Are there programs scheduled for summer, or is that more starting in fall?
That will start back up in September. We take a break in the summer for that. But if anyone is interested, we do have evening prairie walks with at our Doolittle Prairie, which is the largest remnant prairie in Story County.
Mm-hmm.
And that's with Dr. Tom Roseberg. And so he'll share his knowledge, and we'll see rare and common prairie plants. And it's just a really beautiful time to see a prairie habitat. So if anyone wants to go with a local expert, the next one is on Thursday, July 21st at 7 p.m.
And for those who maybe haven't done that before, you can't just go once. You've got to go throughout the year, because about every week or so, there's something new in bloom as the prairie goes through its seasonal succession. So, yeah, I would encourage folks to definitely get out there. And not only does Dr. Rosberg give some, he provides some teachable moments and points out things, but there's a lot of other folks that are out there that know all levels of knowledge, from the novice to those folks who've been doing this for years, and everybody helps one another out.
Yes, it's a very supportive community for sure.
Yeah. Any other activities? Are some of the naturalists, do they have any programs for the public?
We do. If walking through a prairie, if you're looking for something a little more adventurous, we do have kayaking at West Peterson Park, and you'll learn about safety and basic paddling skills for a fun afternoon on the water.
Mm-hmm.
So this is on Friday, August 5th, and we will have 2 different time slots, 9 to 11 a.m. or 1 to 3 p.m. So it's a great opportunity to This is geared more towards kids for them to learn new kayaking skills.
Okay, and who, is this strictly county conservation, or are the Skunk River paddlers involved, or who's helping?
Since it's just on West Peterson Park, it is just a Story County Conservation Program.
Okay. All right. Good to know. And tell me once again when and where that is. For folks that don't know where some of these areas are, you have online the maps and things like that, correct?
We do, yes. So just to reiterate for the kayaking, that's on Friday, August 5th at West Peterson Park.
Okay.
And we do have a map that people can download off of our website, which is just storycountyconservation.org.
Okay. Anything else, Casey, before we close for the day?
Just one more thing. If anyone's interested in volunteering for a Saturday morning, we are doing a July Trail Enhancement Day, or we call TEAM, at our Christensen Woods, which is in Huxley. And we need help on Saturday, July 23rd from 9 to noon to help increase access and complete a trail system.
Okay. And is there a pre-sign-up request on that?
There is, yes. And that is on our website as well. We have a volunteer button, and you can just help sign up through there.
Okay. And having done some of those in the past, I know that there's usually some water and such available for folks if you forget your water bottle. But I'd encourage everybody to, as you say, dress for the conditions and bring plenty of water for this time of year.
Yes, we'll make sure to take lots of water breaks, and we also bring snacks.
Ah, okay. So we don't have to pick berries and mushrooms and things when we're out there. You actually provide safe snacks, huh?
We do, yes.
Okay. Anything else, Casey?
That is it for me today.
All right. So once again, how do folks get in contact with Story County Conservation?
The best way to look at our events and register for volunteer opportunities would be on our website, storycountyconservation.org. If you'd like to register for events or check out camping, that is mycountyparks.com. And the conservation office is located at McFarland Park, and people can drop in anytime from 8:30 to 4:30.
Okay. Sounds great. Casey, thanks for joining us this month, and we'll be looking forward to seeing you again next month.
Thank you.
And another group to join in is the Prairie Rivers of Iowa. This Friday, July 15th from 5 to 7, we'll be meeting for Butterflies, Bees, and Brew at Alluvial Brewing Company. This is a fun evening of fundraising, celebrating Iowa's pollinators and Prairie Rivers of Iowa. So check out their website for details by going to prrcd.org.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown. When you've got worries, all the noise and the hurry
and
seems to help.
We have Susan Guiasta with us. Good morning, Susan.
Hey, good morning. Good to be here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a pleasant morning to start the day out, that's for sure, compared to the last couple days. Wow, this is luxury. Nice 60 degrees.
It's wonderful. The windows are open. I went for a great walk this morning. Uh-huh. And that actually brings up a good point. I've been asked a lot this past week about city policy for picking up debris, storm debris. We do have city policy for picking up storm debris. The city is designated into quadrants. If we determine that one quadrant has more than 25% of properties experiencing storm debris damage, we will then decide whether to open a free site. I have to tell you, in the last couple of days, we've not reached that threshold. There have been limbs down, debris around from high winds, but it has not reached the threshold of 25% of any quadrant. But people have asked me how they would know if we were doing that. Mm-hmm. And again, it's kind of the way that I tell people to get all city news. Please watch our website. Please pay attention to local media like KHOI. Please follow us on social media platforms like City of Ames Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We're also on the neighborhood messaging app Nextdoor. And then again, like I said, look at our website. It would be very obvious if we were initiating some of these storm damage cleanup options. And honestly, those are fairly rare. There have been very few in the 15 years or so that I've been here. So to hit that criteria, it's a pretty significant storm. And the isolated high winds that we've had this last week really haven't met that. So thank you for that opportunity to share that.
Yeah, I know that I saw a couple downed limbs, especially over on Hazel and a few areas there. But we also had a few branches down here at the station, and I think our yard gnomes are going to take care of that. So we should be in pretty good shape there.
I wish I could borrow those yard gnomes.
I think after this program, some of them will start working. So Susan, I see you've brought Barbara Neal with us. What are we about here?
I have. So our transit director, Barbara Neal, is with us today. She is the SciRide director. SciRide is our very busy, robust public transit system here in Ames. Lots of things happening at SciRide. You might think that during the summer they take the summers off, but they do not. They work just as hard all year round providing public transit, not just for the Iowa State community, but for all residents. And I just wanted Barb to provide an update today.
Oh, good morning, Barb.
Good morning. How are you guys
doing? Oh, we're doing well. Welcome.
Thank you.
So one of the first things I want to ask you is, how do you handle that individual who comes upon one of the vehicles in their vehicle and mutters and sputters, but then the next day they're out standing at a bus stop waiting? There's kind of a mental thing here. Have you had any complaints and thanks from the same individuals?
Well, I'm sure we have, actually. I mean, it's always hard to get people out of their cars, but I think once people come out of their cars, I think they realize how easy it is to ride the bus in Ames.
Yeah.
I mean, we do have, like Susan said, a very robust transit service, especially for the size of this community. So making connections, trying to get, I mean, pretty much serve the entire Ames community, you know, from clear out to County Line Road, all the way out to Barilla. So I think it's just getting over that hurdle. But, I mean, as the gas prices have increased, we have seen ridership increases. You know, maybe mm-hmm. it's you're going to ride one day a week, and maybe it's to help save money with regards to gas, or maybe it's just to be better for the environment. So I think that's kind of the push that we've seen now is moving towards a healthier planet and kind of that climate action stuff that the city's looking at.
Well, I know I was going to mention the climate action plan, the idea of innovation as far as more environmentally friendly modes of transportation. And you have something to talk about there. I know we've talked about in the past some of the conversion, but for our listeners, how about talking about some of those?
Yeah, so SciRide, we're working on getting battery electric buses. So we received a grant actually in 2019, a low admissions grant from the federal government, which would award us our first two battery electric buses here in the Ames community. Unfortunately, they've been slow coming due to the pandemic, and now there's some supply chain issues,
right.
And the same computer chip issues that everybody else is having is being seen in the bus industry. We are expecting those first two buses to come probably in October. We were hoping they would be here in July, but due to some of those issues, the thought is probably October. So we should see two of those out on the road. Then we just received notification, actually, I think in April, that we were awarded another $3.1 million from the federal government. So that will allow us to get three more battery electric buses. A battery electric bus costs about $1 million, so they're very expensive. So based on kind of our plan and what we have programmed, we will have probably eight battery electric buses The goal was in 24, but again, so 23-24 budget year, but ultimately because of those supply chain issues, it's always hard to say. So I think that'll be exciting for the Ames community, and we can get a sense of how they'll work for everybody.
Now, you know, you talk about that upfront, that initial cost. Why, as a taxpayer, would I want to do that as far as that kind of investment? What are the benefits, the advantages, not only to the environment, but to the cost savings down the road?
Well, I think anytime you can do things to help the planet, that's a good thing. I will remind you, as a taxpayer, that a lot of this is, ultimately, we all pay federal taxes, but a lot of it is through those low, no grants. So CERAID has been very conservative as we tried to approach this to make sure it is right for our community. We're not jumping. We're slowly wading in, as you might say, to make sure that it is the right fit, because we do understand there's a high cost to that. But I think ultimately it's the way that everybody is kind of moving. So the hope is that those prices will start to continue to come down, much like you're seeing in your own personal vehicles. The prices are coming down. So I'm not sure I answered that question, but.
Well, where I was going was the upkeep, the maintenance, that there is much less because there are fewer moving parts, for one thing, and the fact that it's proven that maintenance costs are down, and of course fuel, though petroleum is really up there right now, and electricity is much more reasonable, and it's a renewable resource.
Correct. Yeah. So that's why we're slowly getting into it. We do know that maintenance costs are much lower on a battery electric bus opposed to a standard diesel vehicle. So we're going to be able to test that a little bit and see what, I mean, we have, obviously there's consultants we've worked with that tell us what our cost savings will be, but I think each community is different. And then we're fortunate to have the City Electric here. So, I mean, electricity is much cheaper, especially in this community than other communities, than the cost of diesel fuel. So.
Okay. Now, for charging those buses, will that occur at the main station, or will they be perhaps a substation or two in the future out on the horizons, the borders of the municipality, just in case something happens?
Well, that's an excellent question. The plan right now, because we don't have the funding to put all the infrastructure that might be necessary on the edges of town, as you speak of, is we are retrofitting our current facility to have the electricity coming in and then stepping it down. So that is in the process of being done at CERAID. So the plan is we should be able to fuel within our current site 17 battery electric buses. So that should give us some expansion growth before. And then the plan will be to just operate those for the battery life, the runtime, which is anywhere between 300 and 500 miles. And they would come back and we would, fuel them or charge them on the off-peak hours to also help the city so that we're not on peak time.
Okay. I know we were visiting with the city fleet director, Mr. Iverson, and wondering, are there other vehicles other than buses within CERAID's fleet that you're going to be converting?
There's not. So transit has some battery electric. There's other alternative fuels probably that we could be looking at. As far as regarding a large bus, there aren't really many choices in Iowa for alternative fuels. So other than maybe more biodiesel, there isn't a hydrogen place here in Iowa. There isn't CNG here in Iowa. So we do have hybrid relief vehicles. So when drivers go to relieve other drivers on route, we look at hybrids there. We do have 12 hybrids in our fleet that are actually 15 years old, or 12 years old, excuse me. Mm-hmm. So we're still running those. You know, that was new technology at the time, but we're looking to always do better, to maybe step into, will this work? Maybe there's interim gaps until we can get zero emissions.
Mm-hmm. Well, just the age of those vehicles sounds like that's a proven technology, that's that stepping stone towards those completely renewables, that somebody made the right choice at the time.
Yeah, I was there, but I'd like to tell you, I wasn't the whole choice there.
So. Okay. So what other things can you share with the listeners about this, about CERAID in general? Let's just go there.
Okay. Well, we're always looking for people. I mean, struggling to find enough staff, much like everybody in Ames. So if you're looking for a great part-time job, I would say CyRide, go to our website at CyRide.com. You can also go to the City of Ames website. We start drivers. You don't need experience. We'll train you for your CDL. We have a $1,000 hiring bonus. We pay $17.51 an hour, and you can pretty much have anywhere from 10 hours a week to about 38 hours a week. So it's nice and flexible. Summer's off if you want. It's a good part-time retirement job. So if you've retired and you want to have a little bit of work during the school year, help us with the academic school year, then we give you summers off if you like that. So, I mean, we're always looking for good people, much like everybody. So I guess I would plug the hiring and help us fill some of those shifts.
I know I...
Barb, I feel like you're looking right at Mike.
Like, yeah, it's like a really good job.
Well, I'll tell you.
You've probably driven some big equipment.
I'm just thinking I'll just have to make, another 8-10 hours a day on a 40, whatever. It sounds like a great opportunity. I can say that I do interact with CyRide often when I'm down at Alumni Hall in that area when the students are loading and we're trying to find a parking spot to do Ollie classes or something like that. But no, it's a wonderful situation. Not every municipality has a transit system like we do here in Ames. And people take that. You know, they see that and they think that everybody has it, but they don't. And this is a great one.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it's one of the, I think, best kept secrets kind of in Ames. I mean, I know I've said this to Susan, obviously ridership's down due to the pandemic, but CyRide is third in the nation in rides per capita. So number of rides based on our population. So it goes New York, San Francisco, and Ames, Iowa. So I think that's something that everybody in Ames should be proud of, that they collaboratively contribute to CyRide and make it the success that we really are.
Well, yeah, it's a great success. I know there's a lot of folks. Occasionally you'll see a piece of equipment that maybe doesn't have the numbers, but that's during certain times of the day. But gosh, during the day, those things are full.
Well, my pushback to be that would be, you see roads that aren't packed all the time too. It doesn't mean we don't need the roads.
Right, exactly. It's part of that infrastructure that when you need it, you're glad it's there. Any last things? I always was curious, and no, I am not going to be a driver right now, but how in the heck can they negotiate those turns, especially on 13th Street, Susan?
So Barb is a driver. She can tell you, not only is she a director, she also pitch hits as a driver.
Yeah, especially those articulated buses. Those fascinate me.
Yeah, actually driving a bus is easier than you think. We have an excellent training program. We give you kind of custom tailor your training, but everybody has about at least 100 hours of driving before they pick up passengers. Anywhere between 100 to 200 doesn't really matter. Again, like Susan said, we're short staffed, so you will see me out driving if you ride the bus, just because it's important to keep that service out there. But I would encourage you, I mean, it's really not, if you have any interest in it, it's not as difficult as you think, because we have an excellent training program.
Great.
And I think we make you a better car driver, actually.
Yeah, it makes you more aware of your surroundings, I'm sure. And it's a little more... I would think you become more pedestrian friendly as well.
Yep, you expect the unexpected. How about that?
Okay.
You're out on the road all the time.
Well, with that, I think we'll leave folks with that message. Expect the unexpected. Thank you, Barbara, Neil, and Susan, thank you for joining us this morning. And we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Okay. Our next guests are Andy Fish and... Is it Malai?
Yes, Malai Infar.
Okay. I don't have very much information. I just know that Andy's with United Way of Story County. But so since I don't have much information, tell me about what's going on here. Maybe Andy could start out.
Hi. Andy Fish with United Way of Story County. As of March, the Education Initiative Coordinator here. And Malai and I are on today to talk to you about two exciting things happening. This week is National Summer Learning Week, and next week is going to be grade level reading week.
Okay, so are you associated then with young readers and those kinds of programs?
Sorry, say that again. I couldn't hear you.
Are you associated then with the Young Reader Program Summer Learning Week?
Yeah, so with Summer Learning Week, BIOA contributes and is a partner with the Ames Public Library, which runs their Summer Reading Challenge, Raising Readers, and has the Reading Buddies Program, which offers one-on-one tutoring support across the county and various sites, and then also the big collaboration of the Summer Enrichment Programs, which take place in Ames, Nevada, and Columbia.
Okay. And Malai, you're with the, is it the grade level readers or what?
Yeah, I'm with the Campaign for Grade Level Reading. So this is a national network of 400 plus communities all across the country. Also two provinces in Canada, Puerto Rico, Hawaii, we're kind of everywhere.
Wow.
And my connection with Ames is actually formerly I was with United Way of Story County in Andy's role. So I took up this position in January, and what I do is I lead all of these different coalitions across the nation. I'm also a board member of Raising Readers in Story County, so I have some deep roots in Story County and in Ames.
So you've got roots here and touches everywhere else, it sounds like.
Absolutely. Well, and so the grade level reading week that Andy referenced is next week. And what that is a week long of virtual events that support early childhood engagement, out of school learning, parent engagement. We have a full week of virtual events that anyone can sign up for. So if folks are interested in participating in that, they're welcome to visit our website at GLR Week 2022. GradeLevelReading.net.
And say that one more time.
GLR Week 2022.GradeLevelReading.net. And you can sign up for any of those free sessions.
Okay. And how long an event is this? You might have said that right at the beginning, but what time frame are we talking about here?
For my events, most of the sessions are plenary sessions, so they're broken down by topic.
Okay.
Usually begin at 2:00 p.m. And then they would be 90-minute sessions. But we also have some evening sessions, too, to honor All American Cities. So one of our neighbors to the south, Des Moines, is being recognized perhaps as an All American City. They are a finalist. And for Andy's events, his events are this week.
Okay.
Yeah, so National Summer Learning Week, this is in partnership with the National Summer Learning Association. So folks all across America are celebrating summer learning. So we know that during the summer, students, particularly students of low-income families, tend to lose some of the knowledge that they've gained over the past school year. And about 90% of teachers in a survey said that they spend about at least 3 weeks the next school year reteaching stuff to get kids caught back up. And so what National Summer Learning Week is raising awareness of the importance of keeping kids learning throughout the summer. And so for us here in Story County, we have had the Story County Board of Commissioners, in addition, the cities of Ames, Zeering, Collins, and I believe Nevada and Huxley have all proclaimed that in their area this will be National Summer Learning Week. So we've got the city and the county on board celebrating. And you can follow us on social media, Facebook at Story County Reads, the name of our coalition.
Okay.
We'll be doing sort of a social media campaign, providing families with tips and tricks on how they can keep kids learning, and highlighting some of our summer programs.
So you're just in general saying keep kids learning. Do you have these broken out at various levels, or how do you go about, is this kind of a general group effort, or do you break them out into age groups, for example?
So we have some summer programs that serve kids specifically in kindergarten through third grade.
Okay.
And then we have other programs that are serving children in kindergarten through eighth. On our social media campaign, we're going to have tips that are applicable to all age groups.
Okay. I know when I was in grade school, there was a crunch for classrooms, and so it seemed like my class level was always with an older class level, and there was a great advantage to that because you got to know what the bigger kids were learning, and so you got ahead. And it sounds like this could be a similar kind of thing, especially for those younger readers.
Yeah, definitely. For example, the Reading Buddies program, which is run by Raising Readers, they do a lot of really interesting stuff with pairing young kids with retired folks or high school students or, you know, folks of different ages to kind of create that cross-generational learning. Additionally, some of our summer enrichment programs pair, say, third through fifth graders together or sixth through eighth graders are together in a group, and they're all interacting and learning. Yeah.
If somebody's interested in volunteering to be for that, the Buddies program you're talking about, how would those folks, would they use the same contact information? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so one way you can do it, probably the quickest way, is to go to the Raising Readers website,
okay,
which is raising-readers.org. And then if you navigate to programs, you can find it on there. You can also sign up directly at tinyurl.com/b-a-buddy. And you'll find the form right there.
Okay. So has this program grown? How old is this program? That, I guess I didn't really ask you that at the beginning.
Oh, I can speak to that one.
Okay.
The Reading Buddies program has been in existence since, I believe, 2014 or 2015.
Okay.
And it started in a collaboration with Harrison Barnes, who gifted some significant funding. So it was formally known as the Harrison Barnes Reading Academy / Reading Buddies. And so it's kind of changed and morphed over time. It is a year-round program, so if parents aren't able to sign their child up for the program this summer, if they miss the programming window for this summer, they can look into it in the fall. And we are accepting volunteers for fall time as well. It is when it happens in the fall or through the school years after school.
Sure, which sounds like a great opportunity for those who, maybe they got a little free time and they don't necessarily want to be involved perhaps in sports or something like that at the time, depending upon what's available. This is a great opportunity to get ahead and keep
for
reading.
Sure. And absolutely. And I would say for our volunteers, there's something for them too. It's very reciprocated in terms of the relationship that's developed with the children. It is one-on-one or sometimes two-on-one. And so you get to know your buddy really well, and there's a beautiful relationship that happens, which is also so important to ensuring literacy.
Pascata.
Yeah, well, a big shout-out to Harrison Barnes. I think he's a graduate of Ames High School maybe 10 years ago. But what a young man that went on to a professional basketball career, but still giving back to the Ames community. That's really great to hear his name linked to the Reading Buddies.
Yeah, he's done so much for the high school, things like that. So just another way he's contributed to the community that he grew up in. Anything else, Malai or Andy?
No, I just really thank the opportunity to share about the importance of ensuring literacy for kids here in Ames and beyond.
Likewise, very much.
Yeah, and we sure are happy to have you on this morning. This is a great opportunity to just let our listeners know that education reading doesn't stop at the end of the school year for kids. It's continuous, and gosh, the more you can do that, the more you can learn, the better citizen you're going to be for our community. Thank you, folks.
Well said. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for what you do, and read on.
KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI, your community nonprofit nonpartisan media. Remember that you can also hear this broadcast online at khoyfm.org and find links to our guest and information you heard during the program. Consider becoming a member and making KHOY your community radio station. With your financial support, go to our website at khoyfm.org and press the yellow donate button to begin the process of becoming a member. If you're interested in volunteering for KHOY, contact us at khoyfm.org or stop in at 622 Douglas during regular business hours.
And thank you, Lynn Carey, for your production assistance on this morning's program. A tug of the toque for KHOI is Mike Murphy, who engineered this morning's local talk, and a big thank you to my Milford Township neighbor, Pat Schlerbaum. You heard from Story County Conservation's Outreach Communications Coordinator, Casey Strucker. You also heard from artist Tim Reed, also from the Readers Group, Malai Amsfar and Andy Fisher, and from the City of Ames Public Information Officer Susan Guyasta, along with Ames Transit Director Barbara Neal. I've been your host, Mike Metz. Stay tuned for Democracy Now!, followed by All Things Piano at 9 a.m. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI. And see you again on the radio.
This is KHOI, Story City, Ames, and surrounding areas.
This is KHOI, Story City, Ames.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!